I love listening to interviews with Tobey Maguire talk about how much water ran in his nose when he was kissing upside down.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, and I mean, I loved, you know, having Toby come back in Far From Home, and he's talking about how his, like, his knees crack when he bends down now.
Yep, I get it. I'm there, brother.
The network children ask for by name. The Defenestrate Media Network.
What happens when mixtapes meet memes? This is Gen Zex. Join JM Bell and Braxton Bunnell as they break down the news, music, movies, trends, and moments that shape Gen X and the world Gen Z is creating right now. We're judging the worlds that raised us, from landlines to smartphones. This is Gen Zex, the culture that was versus the culture that's trending.
You are listening to the world's greatest multi-generational pop culture podcast with Jeff and Braxton.
We're cornering the market on that one.
You know what? I don't hear anybody else doing it.
No, nobody else is talking about it. Just us.
Just us.
If I'm the only one in the room, that means I'm the only one doing it.
That's fair. Yeah. Yeah, no, I absolutely think that's fair. I mean, where else are you going to get two dudes... two white dudes, two straight white dudes, okay, look, we're a little cliche, and that's fine.
I was going to say, where else can you find two cishet white guys sitting in offices talking about?
Right here, I'm like clicking on my phone. I'm like, podcasts? There it is.
Yeah, yeah, Google podcasts. I'm sure you'll find one.
No, that was... that was a joke I saw online a few years ago. It's a, what do you call it when four white guys sit down and talk politics? A podcast.
Yeah.
You know, went to my friend's for dinner and a podcast broke out. That's how Left Show got its first episode. Is we had been talking about doing it. I'd been doing some tests with Forrest and my buddy Jason up in Logan. And, you know, we had a plan. I had a name, I had a graphic, and I had a web address. And just one day I invited over a couple of the guys that were going to do the Left Show with me. And I'm like, let's go down and record just for shits and giggles. Let's see what happens. Mm-hmm. And we went down, and 3 hours later, the wives broke us up. And then the next week I invited the other two dudes over and we did it again, and just now we're 750 episodes in.
Nice.
And that's recording once a week. We've been recording for 737 Sundays in a row with a couple of breaks.
That's a long time.
How my kids still call me on Sunday thinking they can talk is beyond me. I've been doing this more than half of their lives.
Yeah, 14 years.
Yeah, it's been a minute.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's a storied.
Yeah, I think the first show was July 4th, 2011.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So, I mean, there have been some breaks. We're going to take one here in another couple of weeks. We took one last week. Just family stuff, you know, dealing with medical issues and...
yeah, life gets in the way.
Yeah, it really does. And it gets in the way pretty aggressively lately, which is, I find, off-putting.
It does have a way of asserting itself when it wants attention.
Yep. On the other hand, I find myself more comfortable down in Spanish Fork than I was 6 months ago.
That's good.
Yeah, I actually like this little town, which I never thought in a million years I would ever say.
Never thought you'd like Spanish Fork.
It's Doug's joke is that it's all car washes and chicken shops. But they've got a couple of really good burger places that we've tried a couple times. The chicken places are good. It's nice to be able to wash your car whenever you want. I'm right in the middle of two freeways. I am surrounded by grocery stores. And because, you know, Tiffany's been unwell, we don't really go anywhere, you know, except for to the store from time to time when we can afford it. And so, you know, it's homey. I like where we're staying, and I kind of like the town. I wish the speed limits were a little higher. Everything's 25 miles an hour. It is infuriating to drive around this place.
Oh, that's rough. Even the street outside my apartment is 30.
Yeah, it's nuts. So anyway, we were talking about gatekeeping on the comic book show, and reading a letter from a lady who went to the comic book shop and, you know, had knew the MCU and wanted to get into comics.
Oh, sure. I see it all the time.
Yeah, and instead, she got gatekept by some little Neanderthal that was like, well, who's your favorite superhero? And she says, like, Captain America. And he's like, you don't even know his name. She's like, it's Steve Rogers. What's your favorite superhero? And then he instead interrogated her for 5 minutes until she finally just left.
Yeah, very unfortunate. That's disgusting.
Yeah. And so I got to brag on you and the Nerd Store in general, but you in specific, just about how you just showed up with a good general fund of knowledge overall for everything we sold. And doesn't matter who comes in or what their attitude is, you're very polite to everybody.
I try to be.
You know, you're not a gatekeeping American penis haver.
No, I have always said, because, you know, I get this question a lot, because I play Magic the Gathering for like 14 years.
Yes.
And people ask me a lot how I feel about people jumping ship from Pokemon because it's getting too expensive and coming to Magic. And my answer is always, it's amazing to have more people to play with.
Yep.
I will never say no to more people liking a thing that I like, because that means I just get to talk about it more. And I have that exact same view on comics.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about like that, and we talked a little bit about, you know, the older generation being like, you haven't earned this because, you know, geek culture is mainstream now, and when we were kids, we used to get the shit kicked out of us for liking Star Trek and reading comics, and that's the same thing as I'm happy kids don't have to go through that very, very minor inconvenience of bullying that I went through. I know it, and it was much worse for others. You know?
Yeah, it's I was never really like made fun of. I just didn't have friends really. Or like a ton of friends that weren't also nerds.
Yeah.
But, you know, it makes me happy to see that like kids can, you know, like comic books, and it's way easier to make friends off that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, me too.
That's cool.
It is.
That's what human society is supposed to do. I don't know why we're actively trying to fight it.
I don't either. The other thing is it's like, there are parts of the job I miss. I don't miss how swollen my knees were at the end. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't miss my back fucking hurting all the goddamn time. I don't miss having to take ibuprofen and acetaminophen doubled up in what my doctor called heroic doses just to make it through a shift.
I still call them that because of you.
You know, but I miss interacting with people. I especially miss certain regulars. And I miss having deep, meaningful chats with people when I'm trying to recommend books to them.
Yeah.
That is the most fun of that job, is finding somebody something they can read that they're going to love and makes them come back.
Mm-hmm.
So.
No, I think it's that I would say that is probably the part of the job I enjoy the most, is just the puzzle of figuring out what whoever you're talking to will like.
Yeah. Yeah, and is it something I like, or is it something I just know about?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, sometimes it is stuff that I just know about.
Yep. Yeah, because you do. You got to zero in. But no, that was a big long chat we had over on the Comic Book Podcast this week. But on July 7th, 1985, 17-year-old West German tennis player Boris Becker made history by defeating South African Kevin Curran. He became the youngest man and first unseeded player to win the Wimbledon men's singles title, a record he still holds.
Oh, wow.
In South Africa, amid growing unrest, a rare and prominent interview with imprisoned African National Congress leader Nelson Mandela was published by the New York Times, in which he outlined the ANC stance on political equality and a unified South Africa. The chief minister of India's Gujarat state resigned following months of class and religious bloodshed. And in the Soviet Union, Andrei Gromyko officially transitioned from his long tenure as foreign minister to become president of the USSR. Live Aid. The media was heavily fixated on the upcoming Live Aid famine relief concert, which was scheduled to take place a few days later on July 13th. Phil Collins' hit track Susudio was at the peak of the U.S. Billboard charts. The science fiction comedy Back to the Future had just been released, quickly growing into a massive cult hit. And on July 7th, 1985, my favorite Western was released into theaters. Written by Lawrence and Mark Kasdan, whom you might recall from, oh, I don't know, some little picture called Empire Strikes Back, I believe. directed by Lawrence Kasdan. Starring Kevin Kline, Scott Glenn, Danny Glover, Kevin Costner, Brian Dennehy, Jeff Goldblum, Jeff Fahey. He was the prettiest guy in the 80s. He had the dark makeup on his eyes, and his eyes were light blue. Mm-hmm. He was gorgeous. He was a pretty man. And all the movie was Silverado. Silverado, with some of the best one-liners of any Western. My favorite is when he shoots a guy for stealing his horse, and the cavalry, you know, the military's there looking into it, and he's just hanging onto this horse's face and giving the horse kisses, yeah. And the horse is kissing him back. And he's like, "You say this is your horse? Can you prove it?" And he goes, "Can't you see this horse loves me?" I loved it. So, had you seen it before?
No, I had not.
So, what do you think? What did you think?
I really enjoyed it. I mean, I love Westerns. So, I was set up to enjoy this, and I mean, this is a Western. Like, this is
It's got all the tropes.
It does. Yeah. And it does a really good job. I felt it did a really good job of kind of like immersing me in the world.
Quickly.
Very quickly. It gets right into it with the Emmett in that shootout.
Yep. Great shootout too.
Oh yeah. All the effects looked really good. All the shootouts were really fun. They looked believable. Especially, I think it's later after, what's his name, Jake. After Jake and, I can't remember the other character's name. The main guy.
Emmett?
No, not Emmett.
Payton?
Yes, thank you, Payton.
Yeah, Kevin Kline.
Yes, when Jake and Payton get out of the jail and Jake shoots that guy, and then you see Langston come over and just start like from like down the street shooting with his pistol. It's like, yeah, he's going to take cover. He's not going to get up close. He's going to try and get a handle on this before something happens. It was, I felt the action was very believable. The one-liners were great. I think my favorite was when they were in the bar. Payton's in the bar. He sees the guy wearing his hat. and he tells him to stand up. And I think he says something like, you know, stand up and show me or you're not going to make it through the night.
It's the way he says, you're wearing my hat,
mm-hmm.
is so, and I mean this with all the love in the world, Gene Wilder from Blazing Saddles for me.
It does. He reminded me a lot of Gene Wilder, just not necessarily the way he acted, but just his delivery.
Yeah.
Of a lot of the lines. His character is very dry in this. And I liked it. You know, he's a outlaw. He's, was he, because Emmett was just fresh out of prison. Was it, Payton was like a former, not really an outlaw. He was a former like bounty hunter or something.
No, I think they were a crime gang.
Oh, okay.
Because they, the first time you meet Emmett or you meet, Cobb, Brian Dennehy, he's like, whatever happened to that dog?
Oh, yes, that's right.
And then a few minutes later, you meet Jeff Fahey. And the only thing he says to Payton is, where's that dog?
Mm-hmm.
And then they don't explain the dog for another half an hour.
And
when they do, they were being chased by a posse.
Okay, yeah. So, you're right. They were a crime gang. But yeah, I felt it was really good. It's, I mean, I liked all the characters. I think that's the best I can say, as there wasn't a character that I didn't enjoy seeing on screen.
This was one of those where Brian Dennehy was such a fucking presence in this movie. Every time he walked in, he was just built like a brick wall, you know, and just, I love Brian Dennehy in almost everything I've seen him in. And so in this one, he was just bigger than life and so subtle about it. And then there's Linda Hunt. She played Stella, mm-hmm. Midnight Star. And, you know, she was in a lot of weird shit back then because we didn't know what to do with short people in movies. And just for her to be able to play this straight without it being a shtick, I thought it was great.
Oh yeah, it didn't turn her into a caricature.
No.
Or it didn't turn her into a trope. That was just who she was. Yeah, no, I really liked it. I enjoyed the hell out of it.
The subtext on this one. So you got Emmett, who killed a guy who was going to shoot his brother in the back, and he went off and did 5 years. He's on his way back home after 5 years in jail and gets attacked. And that's the first 45 seconds is a big gunfight. And then you get that beautiful shot coming out of that shed. And then all of a sudden it's just wilderness and the big, I just wrote a bit on this the other day, the big brass music. And then you go. And then one of the things that, and I've noticed this in this film before, so it's not new to me, but Kevin Costner knows how to ride a fucking horse.
Mm-hmm.
Did you notice that? I mean, just how easy and smooth he was getting on and off. There's that bit towards the end where he's going to the bar, you know, when the four guys are attacking the town.
Mm-hmm.
And he comes off that barebacked horse, that little piebald, just whoop, and he's just off, like nothing. And I grew up with horses, and that's really not easy to do without falling on your ass.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've only ridden horses like one time, and it was in a very controlled environment. So it was the weird like a horse run where they just walk in a circle.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. My aunt has horses, and sometimes we go out and visit her on her ranch. And so, I got to ride one time. It was fun, but I would never be able to do that. Not without growing up with it for years.
Yeah, no, I'm too fat to do it now. And my knees are shot. John Cleese as straight up tough guy, Sheriff Langston.
Oh yeah, I mean, what can you say? I mean, he was great.
And at the time,
my jurisdiction and tears.
You idiot. He's at everything he's aimed at.
Yep.
No, it was almost shocking to see him play a straight character like that at the time. Now he's done that several times, you know, been more serious on film, but, yeah, it was weird. So, but it wasn't it fun to see Kevin Costner acting?
Yes, it was. It was fun to see him acting in a movie.
Yeah. Yeah. It's weird. I mean, it was that, and I don't know if you knew this, but he was in The Big Chill. Have you ever watched The Big Chill?
No, I don't believe so.
He played the friend who committed suicide, and which is the whole crux of the movie, is this group of friends getting together after one of them commits suicide, and he was that friend. So then they cut the film funny, and all the flashback scenes that Kevin Costner was in, they cut. So he's just the beautiful corpse in the movie. And all you see is the Undertaker getting him dressed. That was Kevin Costner's whole part let me check this really quick, but did The Big Chill get an Oscar? It got Best Picture, Best Supporting Actress, and Best Original Screenplay.
Oh.
Oh, no. Those were nominations.
Oh.
Yeah. But that's still 3 nominations. That's not so bad. And, oddly enough, Best Original Screenplay, Lawrence Kasdan.
Oh, that's good. That's cool.
Yeah.
I mean, he does good work.
He really does.
Yeah, unfortunately, Kevin Costner will always be
Waterworld.
Jonathan Kent in Man of Steel, where he's standing in front of the tornado.
No. Dad, I can get there before anybody can see me. You know?
Yeah. I can fly faster than the speed of sound. I don't really have anything else to say about Silverado. I'd love to hear because I imagine you saw this when you were growing up.
I did. I saw it with my dad. And at that point, I was young and Westerns were pretty, pretty boring for, you know, my age. And so coming into this one where it's not only does it take itself seriously, which is good, but part of the seriousness is the fact that people are funny. You know, and can surprise you, you know, with that. It's like with Cobb, you can tell that he's an asshole and that he'd sell his mother out for a dollar. But you can also tell that he's genuinely fond of Peyton.
Yeah.
You know, it feels like a genuine smile and a genuine piece of happiness when, you know, every time he sees Peyton or he sees Stella. And so I liked that a lot. And yet he's pretty funny when he's talking. And you know, Kevin Kline was funny as hell. Even Scott Glenn had a couple of good lines. And he's usually only funny to me as Stick in Daredevil. But
it was shocking to me seeing Jeff Goldblum in this. Seeing him just kind of there, and then he has like a line at the end.
What was it? Hello, Sheriff. I'm an honest gambler looking to run a clean game here in your town. Who do I talk to about that? It's not this gentleman, is it? To the dead body on the ground. He's got that, and then the betrayal, then the second betrayal, then the fight with Danny Glover, and then he's dead. You know, pretty quick. But Goldblum was barely Jeff Goldblum in 1985.
Oh, that's fair. I mean, yeah, I think it's just odd because I grew up with Jeff Goldblum being like a massive star.
Yeah.
And so it's strange to see him in such a small role.
There we go. So let's see. Body Heat. You ever heard of Body Heat?
I think I've heard of it.
It's a naughty movie. It's a very naughty movie. We may get to that one. That's 81. The Big Chill in 83. Silverado in 85. This is what Lawrence Kasdan has directed. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, he was a busy guy in the 80s.
He was getting around.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I honestly, on this one, it gave me permission to love a Western in the way I had as a little kid. Like, when Dad and I would sneak out of church, we'd go home and watch The Lone Ranger.
Mm-hmm.
When I was a young man and was trying to make money on my own, I ran a lawn cutting service in my neighborhood called The Lawn Ranger.
That's pretty good.
9-year-old me thought that was clever as fuck. You know, so there's always been lore there. One of my biggest dreams is owning horse property.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not a lot. I don't need a lot, but I could do with 30 acres in a wood. Maybe a small stream in which to fish on contemplative days.
Oh, sure. I mean, that sounds extremely peaceful.
It's, you know, I've been dreaming of it lately. I either want to live on a boat or I want horse property. And horse property is probably better for me because I can also, with horses, get dogs.
Oh, sure.
Having a dog live on a boat's not very nice to the dog.
Nah, it's a little cruel. No, I think I'd go with horse property over lake property.
Yeah.
I say as someone who will never be able to afford it.
Same.
Yeah.
I got lotto dreams, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I got lotto dreams. I'm buying 40 acres of wooded lot on the shore of the Puget Sound. I'll buy a fucking island. I win the lotto. Ship my horses out to me. That's what I want.
Just mail these horses. They're airdropped in.
Yeah.
Horse gets sick. You got to do the Fulton recovery unit to get out of there.
All right, let's do this. Let's take a quick break. When we get back on the other side, we can talk about yours, which reminded me of a few things I'd forgotten.
Oh, cool.
All right.
In a world where MAGA is banning and burning books, it is a revolutionary act to read. It's Monday in America is a bold collection from the left show's J.M. Bell about politics, family, aging, and the uncomfortable truths we keep avoiding. No talking points, just real life and a divided country. Order your copy of It's Monday in America today for just $14.99 at MondayInAmerica.com. If you're looking to feel hopeful or inspired, or if you're just frustrated and unsure about where we're headed, this book provides a unique look at the life of a Gen X liberal, the challenges and victories, and the question, what kind of world have we built for our children? It's Monday in America. $14.99 at MondayInAmerica.com. It's Monday in America. Better to die on your feet than live on your knees.
What if there was one place where comic book fans could get everything? News, reviews, debates, and deep dives every single week.
And not just we read one issue and Google the rest kind of takes. We're talking 15 years deep, over 600 episodes.
That's right. The world's greatest comic book podcast has been breaking down Marvel, DC, indie books, movies, and fandom culture long before it was cool.
Whether you're a lifelong collector,
a casual fan who just saw the latest superhero movie,
or someone trying to figure out where to even start,
we have got you covered.
We don't always agree, which makes it way more fun.
Yeah, way more fun.
New episodes every Tuesday.
Real opinions, real conversations.
Zero gatekeeping.
Check out the world's greatest comic book podcast at thecomicbookpodcast.com.
Hey kids, comics!
Hey folks, Jeff here. So, you want to start a podcast? Maybe you already did and it's just not going the way you thought it would. Well, here's the truth. It's not about the mic. It's not about the software. And it's definitely not just about posting episodes. It's about building a show that people care about. That's why I created the Defenestrate Media Podcast Academy. It isn't theory and it isn't fluff. It's a step-by-step breakdown of what actually works. Choosing a name, choosing a topic, building your structure, growing an audience, trying to turn your podcast into a brand, and maybe even a business. If you're serious about podcasting, this is a good place to start. And if you're just tired of guessing, this is how you stop. Check out the Defenestrate Media Podcast Academy and build something worth listening to. You can find more information at theleftshow.com. I liked Solo, A Star Wars Story.
I thought it was really fun.
Yeah.
I think it got a lot more hate than it deserved.
Well, didn't it have like a couple of directors that left to do something else, and then Ronnie Cunningham, the fuck is his name? Ron Howard. You know how I got to Ron Howard? I had to think of Bryce Dallas Howard first.
Oh, okay.
Because her name never leaves my head. She's pretty. But yeah, no, and then he came in and took over, and I wanted more of that. I wanted to see where that went. I wanted to see what the whole deal with the bad Sith guy was.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
I just thought it was cool we finally got to see the Kessel Run. Like, that was sweet.
It was.
It was.
It was nice seeing the Falcon with all of its parts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it was. I'm not going to be mad at a Star Wars movie. I mean, I like all of them.
Yeah.
But I'm never going to be mad at one.
I guess the closest I came was the ninth one that I can't remember the name of all of a sudden. The Rise of Skywalker.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah. I guess I've been upset at them.
I was just like, why did you guys fuck it up? Why did you waste all the cool shit Rian Johnson did?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that and the scene, I can't remember if it was the eighth one or the ninth one, but the scene where the ship jumps to light speed and splits all those cruisers in half.
Oh, that was I think it was the second one of the last three. So I think that was eight.
Yeah, I'm fairly certain within the canon that's just like not how that works because they've done that before and it like hasn't like I don't know if I can't remember if the explanation was like that they overloaded the warp drive or whatever. But yeah, I remember being like, well, this is dumb. Like if we could have done this, why weren't we doing this the whole time? So like just remote control one to do it.
Why do the bombers go so slow? They're spaceships.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, the bombers, like the Y-Wings, they started out like being able to compete with TIE fighters.
Yeah.
And they're shown like blowing a bunch up in the Battle for Endor.
Yeah.
And then like I think it's the RPGs, the role-playing video games are to blame because they made the bombers or the Y-Wings slowly, like slower.
Boo.
And slower.
Yeah, that was the first part, because you get that brilliant opening with Poe Dameron doing the answering machine bit,
mm-hmm.
which frankly was a joy to me to watch. I still mm-hmm. like that scene, you know, and you know, Hux just screaming and yelling and pounding and having a fit, and then Dameron's like, oh, I can hold, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, but anyway, okay, enough about that. It is time for you, sir, to share with me a chunk of your early years.
Yes. All right. We're going to be going back to the year of 2002 for this one. January 1st, the euro became the official legal tender of 12 European Union countries. The Israeli-Palestinian conflict intensified with a wave of Palestinian suicide bombings and Israeli military incursions into the West Bank. Nothing ever changes.
Shit never changes.
President Bush's first State of the Union address vows to expand the fight on terrorism and labels Iran, Iraq, and North Korea an axis of evil. Which, like, killer name.
Great name. But honestly, those of us over here on the liberal side thought it was fucking ridiculous when we heard it the first time.
Oh, absolutely. It is ridiculous.
Yeah.
An axis of evil.
Oh, but the news took it so serious.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I mean, we were fresh off of, you know, 9/11.
Yep. So,
U.S. withdraws from international court treaty. The U.S. also abandoned a 31-year-old anti-ballistic missile treaty in June.
Oops.
Yes. Whoops. Top songs of summer of 2002 include Hot in Here by Nelly, Without Me by Eminem, The Middle by Jimmy Eat World, my least favorite Jimmy Eat World song.
Okay.
Yeah, for those keeping score at home, my favorite is Bleed American.
Oh, that's a good one.
Oh, fantastic song.
Yeah. No, Jimmy Eat World came out. I was like, hey, this is worth putting down Pink Floyd for a minute and listening to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've done it before. I'll do it again. Sure.
Nickelback's How You Remind Me ends the year at number one on the Billboard Hot 100s.
It was a very popular song.
And for the first time on the feature film on the big screen, a shy teenager is bitten by a genetically modified spider and uses his spider-like abilities to fight crime. What can I say? It's Spider-Man 2002.
Yeah.
It's, you know, what can I say about this movie that has not already been said? It's fantastic. It's so Sam Raimi to its core.
It's Evil Dead with Spider-Man and a much bigger budget.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's stellar. I think Tobey Maguire was a good Spider-Man. I think he nailed the nerdy Peter Parker college student really well. Which makes, you know, emo Peter in the third one that much funnier.
So funny.
So amazing. Him pulling the hair over his eye and wearing all black.
Dancing.
Yep, dancing in the street.
Dancing.
Still to this day, I will vocal stim and just say pizza time for no reason. But yeah, this was the movie that got me into superheroes. I saw it when I was really young. I was probably about 8 or 9 the first time I saw it, because I mean, I was like 1 when this movie came out. I see you holding your head in your hands over there.
It's an audio medium. No one needed to know.
Yeah, I know, but like,
oh fuck me. That one hurt. That one, I gotta admit, that one did some damage.
That did some psychic damage on that one.
Emotional damage.
No, I mean, you've got Tobey Maguire, Kiersten Dunst, Willem Dafoe, James Franco, J.K. Simmons as J. Jonah Jameson, who would be cemented as J. Jonah Jameson for like ever.
There's no one better.
No, he did it best. He will always do it best.
Yeah.
What was it? Blade said in the Deadpool vs. Wolverine, there's only ever going to be one Blade.
Yeah, like, there's only going to be one J.J.
Yeah, only ever going to be one J.J.
I'll tell you what, he had the best subtle redemption arc as J. Jonah Jameson when Goblin comes in and you know, he's like, who takes the pictures? He's like, I don't know. He mails them in. I have no idea. Totally covered, you know. Absolutely.
No, it does show, like, I really like this movie because it really gets to kind of play around with the characters a little bit.
Yeah.
And it showed that Jameson does care about Peter. Like, he doesn't want Peter to get hurt. Like, yeah, he's hard on him. He's an asshole, but that's just kind of who he is.
Yeah.
So it's, I mean, it's a fantastic moment in that movie, and Willem Dafoe's Green Goblin was light years ahead of its time casting. That was so that was Raimi's horror influence showing through.
Yeah. Okay. So there were some choices made by Willem Dafoe in this movie. Some of them were fucking genius. The whole argument at the mirror, mm-hmm. years before Lord of the Rings did it in the water.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Great. Willem Dafoe crawling across the floor like he's in an 80s movie or an mm-hmm. 80s music video towards his mask. Okay. That one made me uncomfortable.
Yeah, I get that. I get that it was supposed to symbolize him actually like becoming the goblin and like giving in to, you know, this voice that he's hearing.
Yeah.
But I mean, this movie is just, it's so incredibly important to me because like I said, this got me into superheroes. It got me into comic books. I remember my dad used to buy me the little digest size of Brian Michael Bendis's Ultimate Spider-Man, will now always be my favorite Spider-Man series.
Okay.
But I mean, yeah, it's okay. I want to hear what this reminded you of that you had forgotten.
Hang on. I'm doing a little mental arithmetic really quick. I'm trying to figure something out. What I forgot. Well, so let's see. 2000. This was 2002, right?
Mm-hmm.
1970. I was 30.
Okay.
I was newly married and had my first kid on the way.
Yeah, no, yeah, I would have been like, yeah, because I was born in 99, so I'd have been two.
So, let me do one more. How old is Kirsten Dunst? Okay, age appropriate. Hot diggity, let's go. So, she's older than my wife. I had no idea, you know, that the young lady from Vampire Lestat had boobs.
Okay.
And then all of a sudden, Sam Raimi puts her in a tank top in a rainy alley, and you're like, when did that happen? That makes me uncomfortable.
Okay, that scene makes me uncomfortable, but just because of the upside down kiss. Like, I'm so glad we're done doing that, at least for now. Like, I'm so over that. I'm glad that we're also done doing Spider-Man origin stories.
Oh my god.
Like, please, like, I understand it. For this one, had to do it. You know, we were introducing the modern audience to Spider-Man. That's cool. Do an origin story. Why did Amazing Spider-Man need one? And why did...
Well, because they changed the origin.
Oh, did they change it in ASM? It's been... The last time I watched Amazing Spider-Man, I did it as a drinking game. So that's remember that movie.
That's the one where the only reason he got his spider powers and didn't die was because... It was based on his family's DNA.
Oh, yeah.
So we had to set up the whole thing with mom and dad stealing information from, I think it was Oscorp.
Yeah, they stole from Oscorp. And then you got the whole thing with Connors and the lizard.
Yeah, and they get murdered.
I remember, yeah, they made it dumber. Yeah, they made it.
Yeah, but to make it dumber, they did have to retell it.
Yeah. No, yeah, to make it bad, they had to redo it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, and also, I just want to say, James Franco is Harry Osborn. Awesome. Cool.
Not bad, yeah.
Yeah.
James Franco usually bugs the shit out of me.
Cliff Robertson will always be my Uncle Ben.
Dude, he's so good.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's so good. Martin Sheen and Cliff Robertson, to me, are both... really perfectly fine Uncle Bens.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
No, they, I mean, they nailed the character.
Yeah, Marching and Sally Field, I think, were my favorite couple.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I think my favorite Uncle Ben is this movie, and my favorite Aunt May was the lady who did it. You're not Superman, you know.
Oh, I think I know who you're talking about.
I just can't remember her name.
Yeah. But no, I mean, he's great. He does a great job with the surrogate father, you know, guiding hand on Peter's life. With great power comes great responsibility.
Yeah. Rosemary Harris. Rosemary Harris was May Parker. Joe Manganiello is in it.
Oh, yeah. As Flash Thompson.
Yeah. Back before he got all, like, super ripped.
Mm-hmm.
That was weird.
Yeah, I'm trying to... Oh, this movie does have one of my favorite cameos in a movie of all time, and that's Macho Man Randy Savage as Bonesaw.
Well, being introduced by Bruce Campbell.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, yeah. It's fun. It's the best part. Okay, a couple things about the Raimi movies that crack me up. The first being Bruce Campbell's going to be in there somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
It may just be like in Darkman, where he's just a person turning around at the end of the movie and he gets 1.5 seconds of screen time to get his SAG card. you know, but he was in all three of the Tobey Maguires.
Mm-hmm.
And the funny part of his interviews about it are he's the only character to ever beat Spider-Man 3 times.
Mm-hmm.
Macho Man Randy Savage, obviously great. But then the thing about Raimi is Uncle Ben's car is the same car from the Evil Dead movies.
Yeah, and I believe...
He puts it in all of his movies that he can.
Yeah, because it showed up in Doctor Strange Multiverse of Madness,
yep.
Along with Bruce Campbell as the hot dog vendor.
Yep. And Pizza John. No, Pizza... Papa Pizza. Pizza,
oh,
Papa.
Papa Pizza, that's what it is.
Pizza Papa. Pizza Papa, yeah, always gets paid.
But yeah, it was cool to see Macho Man in this, because I had like kind of known who Macho Man was because my dad was super into wrestling.
Yeah.
And so I knew who Macho Man was. I had watched like some Macho Man, like some of his matches and some of his when he was like cutting a promo. But seeing him in this, another vocal stim for me is the bone saw is ready. Yeah, I got you for 3 minutes.
I got you for three minutes. Playtime. No, it was such a, pardon the vernacular, a spectacular movie.
Mm-hmm.
It was fun. I love listening to interviews with Tobey Maguire talk about how much water ran in his nose when he was kissing upside down.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, and I mean, I loved, you know, having Toby come back in Far From Home, and he's talking about how his, like, his knees crack when he bends down now.
Yep. I get it. I'm there, brother.
Mm-hmm.
I do. I don't know. It's a great movie. It was a fantastic little movie. And... You know, I don't even hate the third one. I don't. Topher as Flash Thompson? Or was he Brock? He was Brock.
He was Eddie Brock.
He was Eddie Brock. But still, no. That was bad casting.
No, and I, I hate that Venom suit. I hate it so much.
Mm-hmm.
Venom should be big and buff. He's a giant alien.
Yeah. Like, he can add bulk.
Why is he just Spider-Man with a bigger mouth?
James
Franco. Yeah, I mean, I think that's all I've really got on this. I mean, it's historic. It's legendary. It's one of those movies that I believe has changed pop culture forever.
Well, I mean... You get what you get when you're a kid, right? So mm-hmm. I was born in 72. Batman 66 was in syndication at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I was watching that after school every day. And every time the announcer came on, you know, oh no, well, our Caped Crusader and the Boy Wonder make it out of trouble this time. Tune in next time for the thrilling conclusion. Same bat time, same bat channel. Mm-hmm. And it was in syndication, so they were out of order. So you never knew. You know?
When is the next bat time and the next bat channel?
Yeah, exactly. It wasn't until I had them on VHS that I was able to finally watch them all in order.
Mm-hmm.
In the 90s, before your parents were old enough to bone. No, I do, man. I love Bruce Campbell. I love the Raimi family. I love Ted Raimi a lot too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's a good go-to actor for Sam to use, the same way that James Gunn uses Sean.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just have your quirky, talented, funny-looking brother. You just throw them out in front of the camera for shits and giggles. And Sam Raimi does that a lot with Ted.
Oh, you know?
Yeah. Elizabeth Banks was in this movie. Elizabeth Banks was Miss Brandt.
Okay.
Welcome to the Daily Planet, Peter Parker.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Just a little throwaway part for her, but I just remember she was in it. But yeah, no, it's you remember. So like Batman 66 was one of the reasons why I'm a Batman addict now, mm-hmm. even though I know as an adult that Batman 66 was garbage and ruined Batman for at least 15 years,
mm-hmm.
you know, until Frank Miller fixed him.
Yeah, Frank Miller fixed that. Frank Miller was carrying the weight of DC.
Yep. Yep. Well, that's fun. I like that. Let's go ahead and call this a show and move ourselves over to Patreon. You can find me over there at patreon.com/defenmedia, D-E-F-E-N media. Every week that we record, we put special content up there for our Patreon family. It's affordable. It's cost effective. It's a great way to get more entertainment for your buck. Give it a shot.
For your hard-earned dollar.
Yeah. Patreon.com/defenmedia, D-E-F-E-N media. With that said, Braxton, had a great time, buddy. Thanks again.
Always a great time. We'll see you next week.
See you next week.
Did you like the show? Join JM and Braxton on Patreon. Patreon.com/defenmedia. Each week they record, they upload additional content exclusively for the Patreon family. Patreon.com/defendmedia